Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. A couple of weeks ago, we had Eric Levy on our show regarding the National Liberty Alliance. He's been a part of the leadership and been in the leadership meetings for quite a while. And he reached out to me regarding some questions with Republic Review and some of these other things that I kind of blurt out or I'll share with somebody and or say something probably in the leadership meetings or when have you. And anyway, he started reaching out to me, asking me more questions, asking me for documents and so forth. And so I basically, I said, this is good material or this is good information. And as I stated last time, a couple of weeks ago, that it sometimes helps to hear people ask the same question to get a different perspective. And so I wanted to go through these and we never got a chance to go through all of the questions that he had. So there were some questions regarding freedom of the press. There were some questions regarding religious and or unrighteous types of laws, whether the government can do those types of things, and grievances, that type of stuff. So, excuse me, long story short, I reached out to Eric and I said, hey, let's kind of wrap up these questions. And so today we're going to sit down and talk with Eric regarding the outstanding questions that we didn't have. Now, one of the things I want you to understand is there are a lot of players, and one of the side conversations that we had was organizations. So there's a lot of different organizations that are out there trying to do good things. And the real kind of question we had in a side conversation was, are organizations that are supposedly conservative trying to save the country, is their priority the organization or is their priority the Constitution and saving the Constitution as they claim? The Republican Party is a great culprit or a great example of how an organization puts itself above the Constitution constantly. And as my good friend, we're going to have John Charleston on. We're going to interview John regarding label lynching. We're going to even talk about that. And I've talked about label lynching before. But nevertheless, what we're going to do when we come back from the break is we will have Eric Levy with us. And we will be discussing these remaining questions and some other high-level it's going to take its own volition. So please stay tuned. And as soon as we get back, we're going to actually delve into some of these deeper questions that Eric has had. Thank you so much. And we'll be right back after this. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic Review, they can enforce compliance to their Constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic Review. Please read my argument for Republic Review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's, and if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
Okay, folks. Well, we're back with Eric Levy, and Eric, we were talking the last time about the CDC and the federal government, their authority through the Commerce Clause. And we also covered the militia versus the National Guard. There are still a few topics that we were going to hit into that you wanted to cover. One of them was the freedom of the press and what can be done about Plato's propaganda machine, or that's how I kind of worded the your question and concern. So do you want to put context to this question before I just go into a diatribe? And welcome back, by the way. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. I think let's begin your diatribe. You know where I'm coming from. I feel we're kind of in this cesspool of communist doctrine, and cultural Marxism has not just taken root, but it's blossomed and flourished, and it's a detriment to us all, and I'd like you to go ahead and do your thing.
Right. So, so if you look at it, the concept or the paradigm of freedom of the press is a very enabling paradigm. In other words, the press can get away with murder. If you think about it, that concept of giving them full liberty and full freedom allows them to do any type of thing, manipulation or what have you. And I don't think that the concept of the freedom of the press was ever expected to be, let's just say, a compulsion upon the states. The Constitution or the general government was granted this power of creating practically a fourth branch of government without actually creating it with that Bill of Rights. The intent behind the Bill of Rights was to restrain the federal government. All these amendments of the first 10 amendments or the Bill of Rights, those were constraints that were strictly placed upon the federal government. And that's because there was a lot of fear that the federal government would start assuming all sorts of powers. Throughout the ratification debates, the real topic was, the enumerated constitution versus a general constitution. And so the federalists kept on haranguing the anti-federalists. Look, this is an enumerated constitution. If it's not listed, they can't meddle with it. So this is where I kind of take this real hard stand that the Federalists were absolutely correct. We didn't need the Bill of Rights. Had we not passed the Bill of Rights, had the Bill of Rights never been written, the states would have had to have maintained the paradigm of enumerated powers, which then would have created this, let's call it a conscious awareness at the state level, that the states would have to jealously guard all the things that were not delegated so that the federal government couldn't usurp them. But they were given this Bill of Rights as kind of, I'll call it a false blanket, because all of a sudden they feel, oh, well, we're free, that the federal government can't do all of these things. And they actually abided by all of those things as much as they possibly could. Now, they did violate some of these things down the road. But the fact of the matter is, for the first almost a century, the federal government behaved really well because of the Bill of Rights, and they basically stayed within the framework of the enumerated powers, but they actually started encroaching upon those things with the Assumption Act and, as you know, the Sedition Act and some of these things. So it's not like the federal government was, what's the best way to say it? An innocent, a bystander, or, the perfect little child. They were constantly trying to assume powers, but in a juvenile way. If you look at neighborhoods that have the three different schools, you've got an elementary school, a junior high school, and a high school, and the shenanigans and the pranks that the kids play around an elementary school is very juvenile. And the middle school, they start doing things like painting and so forth. And so they can kind of do some property damage and that type of stuff. But usually grade schoolers, elementary kids, their shenanigans, their little pranks, the laws that they break are really minor. But when you get to high school, that's where they start stealing your cars, breaking into your houses, taking your booze, and they get very serious in crime, if that makes sense. And it was a very similar process in the general government as it started maturing and started to learn how to be more manipulative between the parents, using some parents against the other parents. The concept of a parent-child relationship between the general government and the state government is a very good metaphor to try to intermix. But back to this whole thing regarding the news or the freedom of the press, the states were never constrained from being able to create standards. And as a matter of fact, what's your feelings on the 14th Amendment?
Well, you know, I never paid attention to, Article 3 until you brought it up. I only read the first paragraph and only focused on that, you know, all of the...
Right.
I'm sure you've heard all the many things said about it and how it's, the dormant clause and how it subjugated the people. So that's all I ever really focused on. But I thought it was fascinating, your whole Article 3 argument, which I love. By the way, that is a great analogy, the child-parent relationship. That's fantastic. But please, continue.
Okay, so when you look at the 14th Amendment, and as a matter of fact, you're talking to somebody that prior to this conversation right now today, I was actually downloading pages of the Congressional Globe. And you should actually go look at the Congressional Globe. If you've never looked at it and try to read it, you'll understand it is a very cumbersome task. It's arduous in not only downloading, but trying to capture that text, especially if you want to cite it, because these are images. These are TIFF images. But anyway, I digress. The 14th Amendment, I don't want to get into the whole context of my article that I'm writing, because I'm writing kind of a mini book on this. But most people do not understand the divine hand of providence. I believe that the Bill of Rights was really not necessary per se, that during the beginning, the reason that the Bill of Rights were, the reason why Madison, I'll just put it this way, the reason why Madison was so driven, because one, he was a man of integrity, and he promised that he would author a Bill of Rights. So, I mean, the tenacity of that man going in the very first year, actually having the Bill of Rights written and produced and ready to send out to the states was, incredible. And some of the things I've learned about what he did, what he noted, and how he pointed out that not one state government had a Bill of Rights, that the states could be the most oppressive government in all of America because there were states that weren't even guaranteeing the right to bear arms. So the Bill of Rights, when it was created, the drive behind it was to create this protection from the federal government that they couldn't mess with any of these things. And then the final two amendments were the concept of, we want to make sure that there is a statement that preserves to the states all things and to the people respectively, all things that weren't delegated, those things remain to us. And so the last two amendments, I honestly believe, could have been the only thing that was necessary in the Bill of Rights at that time. The individual privileges and immunities was not necessary. However, only the divine hand of providence understood what was coming down the course because slavery was maintained. You got to understand that during the Constitutional Convention, they were moving forward that they were going to disband slavery. And it was August 22nd when Georgia and the two Carolinas came forward and says, we're leaving if you guys are going to take away slavery, because we can't exist without slavery. And they knew that they had gone too far down the path of slavery to be able to deal with the freemen. Right, wrong, or indifferent, this was the point in time where we had to suck it up. And this is when Mason made this comment that every slave owner is a petty tyrant, and that since God can't punish nations and countries and states in heaven, this nation and these states will be punished for, you know, keeping this with the calamities of, you know, and if you read that, and that it'll be in my article, so you'll want to read the article or the mini book. But he basically prophesied that we were going to have a civil war because of this. And he was absolutely right. So the divine hand of providence had to have known that we needed to have these Bill of Rights, not necessarily for the federal government, because had we just maintained the paradigm that the federal government has been enumerated powers and this is the only thing they can do, we would have, as the states, we would have been able to keep them in check even to today, especially if we kept those paradigms. But this is why most people, when you talk to them about the Constitution, the only thing that they actually know and understand are the Bill of Rights. They don't understand the real Constitution. The Electoral College still eludes most people. So anyway, there was a need for the Bill of Rights to be applied to the states, because this is when the darkest time in America had occurred, because the Civil War, after the Civil War, the Southern states were doing such inhumane practices towards the freedmen. I mean, they were not allowing them to, you know, obtain political power. They weren't allowed to assemble. Their freedom of speech was being hindered, their ability to have arms. So Congress actually started going down this path of, they had this Civil Rights Act. I don't know, most people don't know that the first Civil Rights Act was written in 1866, but because it had no teeth, this is where, you know, Congress finally woke up and said, you know what, we actually have to create an amendment to the Constitution. So in a very short period of time, they actually created this 14th Amendment. And in the article, I kind of talk about how it progressed, because Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, really, when it was drafted by the House, they only wanted to just go after those people who had committed problems or who committed rebellion against the Union, just to, you know, hang them or hurt them or keep them out of public office. And that actually was modified significantly to basically say no one, you know, no one who is under oath, if they violate their oath, they commit rebellion or support people who are committing rebellion against the Constitution, they lose their office. So anyway, and I know what I'm supposed to be talking about is the press, but the 14th Amendment only applied, out of the Bill of Rights, it only applied the individual privileges and immunities to the states. In other words, at that point in time, you probably didn't know this, but the states still had state-sponsored churches. I believe Delaware and New Hampshire were two of the states that actually still had state-sponsored churches, and some of the, out of the original 13, and some of the new states that were standing up actually had state-sponsored churches. The only state that actually was restrained and told that they could not create a state-sponsored church after the 14th Amendment was Utah with the Mormon Church. They didn't want them to be able to. And so this is, and it's kind of ironic because it was, if you understand the whole intrusion of marriage, it all came from the states at the time when Mormons started practicing plural or bigamy or what have you, the states demanded that the federal government inject itself into marriage unconstitutionally.
Yes, but wasn't it part of the agreement of Utah becoming a state that they would not engage in polygamy?
So where is that in this Constitution that this, that the federal, it's the same thing with the Monroe Doctrine, not the Monroe Doctrine, the Missouri Compromise. The Missouri Compromise gave the federal government the ability to dictate to states their destiny. You are going to become a slave state. You will be a free state. There's no power delegated to the federal government over dictating the destiny of a state. And as a matter of fact, if you understand, so this is where I talk to people, because we start really creating, we go on dangerously thin ice when we start allowing the federal government to create any type of restrictions, barriers, or whatever you want to call it regarding religion. Is marriage a religious institution, or is marriage a civil institution? Near as I can tell, it goes all the way back to Adam and Eve as a religious institution. that it has always been man who has this tendency, the people that have this, oh, we want government to, you know, start getting involved in religion. And clearly the Bill of Rights stated the Congress shall create, and I like to rephrase instead of Congress, the federal government shall not make any laws or have any jurisdiction over religious expression.
Right. And my point being that if you want to be a part of this union, and I agree, it's a religious act. If you want to be a part of this union, polygamy goes against our Christian beliefs, and you shouldn't be allowed to. Now, I mean, you may have heard Brent Winters say this. There's only one state in the whole union that is still a civil law state, and that's Louisiana.
Yeah. Actually, I informed the NLA a few months ago, because I don't think they knew that. I learned that a long time ago, that Louisiana was only a civil law state. And they go, is that correct? And I go, absolutely. And so I think it was Brent that did the research and came back and goes, yeah, that is correct.
Well, he's been saying that for a number of years.
Maybe he wasn't on that call then, because it was almost like I dropped a bomb, you know, in the phone call when I said not every state in this union has, you know, common law as its recognized law of the state.
Now, who are you speaking with, John or Brent?
Yeah, it was a leadership meeting with John. And so they kind of went into, I don't want to say denial, but it was like they'd never heard that before. And I do remember Brent coming back and saying on the line, yeah, is only as of recent, Louisiana has been giving the right of trial by jury for capital cases only in court. So most people for crime or what have you, they do not have the privilege of a trial by jury.
I was going to say this is, I've heard John take this tack as well. It's, as far as I'm concerned, that's unacceptable. They should not be allowed in this country. They should not be allowed in this union. You must have our law. Anyway, please continue.
Yeah. So you're absolutely correct that Congress does have the power to create the requirements. And as a matter of fact, Congress did exert its authority over states coming into the union that they had to be Christian, they had to speak English, and those types of parameters. And so the question is, does Congress have that power? Well, technically, they have unlimited power and exclusive jurisdiction over territories. And they do have the power of the admission of states. So that, and I don't have a problem with stating that Congress can kind of stipulate that, but I do have a problem when it comes to the Missouri Compromise and dictating the destiny of a state regarding something as egregious as slavery. That's when the federal government, it was supposed to be a state issue, that the state was going to be, you know, destined to its own direction that it wanted to take, whether it wanted to be a slave state or not. And so anyway, we've definitely digressed, but the intent of the 14th Amendment was to only apply the protections of the individual privileges and the individual immunities. So there was no organizational application of the Bill of Rights. In other words, the states were still able to actually have their own state-sponsored churches. The states were still capable of controlling and even, I'll call it managing or regulating the press. The states actually had the ability, and to this day, they still do within the Constitution. The problem is most people just look at the Bill of Rights as a full application to the states, and that's not true. The full application of the states would mean that all privileges and all immunities regarding restrictions of the federal government or even just stating that the Bill of Rights, the full Bill of Rights is applied to the states. But that was not the case. It was focused on the individual privileges because they were trying to protect the individual freedmen, not institutions and organizations. So anyway, what states can do and what states really should do, because in Plato's Republic, he talks about a propaganda machine, that the state should control the messaging, the narrative, so that they can move people in the direction that they want them to be good citizens and to, you know, to abide by their rules. And so the press is literally that powerful institution that can force and direct people in that way by using manipulative words. I mean, why is it that everybody rolls their eyes when somebody starts talking about a conspiracy? Because we've been conditioned to believe that anybody that talks about a conspiracy is a wacko, because that's how the press has labeled us. It's called label lynching. And so the press has been doing label lynching for decades. Anyway, there is no reason why the states can't actually have a monitoring mechanism. So a long time ago in my first book, but I would say a long time ago, I think it was in 2012, I wrote my first book and I talked about how the states could use, I think I talked about it in there, but the intent was that the states could create like jury duty, but this would be press or media duty, where you would go in and you would look at the different functioning press and media within the state and determine whether objective reporting or not. If they're not objective, if they're biased, in other words, almost every article that talks about guns has a negative light on guns and, you know, suppresses the real facts on the, you know, the importance of, you know, self-protection, self-defense and those types of things, then the state would then label that agency, that media outlet, as a propaganda machine because they're not being objective. They're, in other words, they're trying to throw their bias in influencing the people. The states have to understand that the media has a responsibility not to inject their, you know, what they want in manipulating people. And so the state would then move that media, or actually label that media, as a propaganda and or an entertainment and or a sensational type of organization, to where they would no longer have the freedom of the press. They would be able to be taxed, and the state would be able to start, I don't want to say punishing, but saying, you know what, you've lost your privileges of being a free press. You are now, you know, what you print and your revenues, we're going to tax. And, you know, we're going to, you know, make you have to pay for licensing and those types of things. Because technically, I don't think you should have to, for an individual to start reporting. There's no reason why you can't report as a press type of person. But they've already, the press themselves have created these barriers for individual press, so that they've used government to protect their monopoly and to protect their ability to manipulate people. And that has to change as well. So that anybody and everybody can start providing, you know, information, whether it's objective or not, it's one thing. But when you become an institution and you're constantly trying to provide one flavor. So let's say there's a right machine out there that is, you know, only presenting their argument in trying to contradict, and they're not being objective. They too would be labeled as a label lyncher or a propaganda machine. And the state would then regulate them and reel them back in. Does that make sense?
Makes plenty of sense. Makes all kinds of sense. You know, the Bar Association does the same thing. They did the exact same thing. They now control, they use the state to protect their monopoly, and now they control everyone who can or cannot, quote unquote, practice law. It's the same thing. Yeah, and all your points, I understand. I take them. And I think, how soon can we start? Because we need to start. Let's do this.
Well, so this can only happen after the states actually take their stance on the Constitution. In other words, right now, the progressives and the subversives in government have created, and they'll come after you if any state started creating regulations. So what has to happen is the states have to assume their superior role. They have to step up as parents. You know, I always like using the metaphor of when a child starts misbehaving. If you've ever seen a bad parent constantly engages, don't do that. Now, don't do that. You know, and they go through this iteration of, and the child starts learning at where that threshold is to where they have to stop. And so sometimes it's, you know, when mom get, you know, or when dad uses a tone or an amplitude of don't do that, that's when they stop. Or they'll go all the way to when mom and dad get up. Oh, they're out of their seat. I'm going to stop. I'm going to behave. But see, the problem is that the states or parents that do that, in my opinion, that's poor parenting. What you have to do is you have to lay the law and you say, do not do this. And when they do that, you just get up, whoop, and you deliver whatever punishment that is, you know, suits the bad behavior. That way, the child absolutely understands that this is a line I can't cross. And if I cross it, I'm going to, you know, have to deal with the consequences. 9 times out of 10, then the child never gets to the stage of being manipulative and learning, you know, okay, he's got a new threshold. I can actually go a little bit further and create that manipulation that the child does. I mean, I remember reading a really, really old book, and it was all about control. A child is always trying to usurp the control of the parents. And that's exactly the same relationship with the government. And so I believe it was Dr. Dreyfus, So You Want to Raise a Boy, I think it was his first book. So You Want to Have a Child was his second or third book, because I think he did a boy, daughter, and then a child. And so he talks about this constant struggle over power and control between the parent and the child. And so the problem is that the states, all they have to do is stand up and assert their authority. What we can't do it as an individual state. In other words, understanding that it's more than just two parents. We've got 50 parents here. We need a majority of the states. And when I say a majority, for Republic Review to have the political force to force the federal government into full compliance. When I say force, the full force over Congress, because when they're at the stage of demanding Congress dissolve and disband all of these unconstitutional powers, the states have to have a level of control that they can literally change the makeup of Congress so that they have the people that are willing to fulfill their oath of office and support the Constitution. So in other words, right now it's 27 states based on the makeup of red states. I can imagine it. Maybe we could have 28 or 29 as that threshold, but currently with, I think, Pennsylvania as the 27th state, it gives us enough control over the representation in the House of Representatives. You only need 25, or actually 26, to have the full control over the Senate. Does that make sense?
Yep.
And the way they have this control is that when the state communicates to their representatives that you will abide by and support the Constitution and disband these things, and if they don't do that, then the state can actually use Article 4 of the Constitution and charge them with treason. They're committing rebellion against the Constitution. Have them come back, try them for treason, because if you look at Article 4, the state has the ability to extradite anybody who is out of the state that has been charged for treason. Whether they ran away or not, they have the power to do that. Now, if you look at Congress, both the House and the Senate, they do not have, so they have this protection over the from, you know, being punished by the law. In other words, they commit a misdemeanor. I think if they commit a felony, they can be removed, or they have this protection that while they're in session, the law can't touch them.
Mm-hmm.
Except when they commit a felony and or treason, they can be removed for that. So they don't even have protection from treason. So when the state actually starts demanding, let's say they have a long-term senator, you know, if they started doing Republic Review, there could easily be a senator sitting in the Senate that has been elected before the state had this epiphany and the people had this epiphany of demanding this. That senator could be emboldened to say, you can't remove me until the next election. No, read the Constitution, because then they can charge them. And that's how I could see some resistance by some of these folks.
Yes, absolutely.
And so the states can then actually get everybody that needs to be on board in shutting down all this unconstitutional power. Fact of the matter is that the states at that point in time can start defending itself as well as asserting its constitutional powers, or its constitutional protections is probably a better way of reestablishing, if a state wanted to, the a union or a relationship with church to take over compassionate services. Wow, imagine that. Imagine that a state all of a sudden, in my recommendation, in my future books, my recommendation would be that instead of a state establishing a single relationship, create a symbiotic relationship with all those religions who are in support of liberty. In other words, you know, if it's a Jewish faith and they support liberty, you know, in other words, leaving individuals the ability to choose for themselves whether they want to do this, that, or what have you. You got to understand, liberty has a symbiotic relationship between freedom, responsibility, and accountability. Liberty does not mean just free agency. It means the ability to do something, but still you have to be held responsible and willing to be accountable for your actions. Now, I'm just trying to make this picture here so that as soon as the states are actually asserting republic review, they can actually start taking control again and fixing themselves. They can literally start fixing themselves and creating symbiotic relationships so that every church can then start getting involved in education and healthcare and all the things that they used to do before. That's how you make America great once and for all.
Once and for all. Absolutely. Yes, exactly. Right. Not just again, but once and for all. Yeah, precisely.
Let me just say this. I want to go back to this concept of a jury duty. We call it press duty. There has to be a good mechanism within the state so that the people kind of police the press to make sure that the press stays within the bounds of objectivity. Does that make sense?
Oh, totally.
Right, because that's the best way to do it. I'm not necessarily a fan of jury duty. I do see it as an essential thing. The reason I don't find it I'm not a fan of it the way it is being exercised today, because it's an insult on the compensation, other than the fact that, you know, I understand we have this obligated duty. Just like the militia, if we institute the militia today, there has to be an appropriate compensation, because time today is money. Back in the framers' day, you know, once you've planted the seeds and you've watered them, I mean, you've got time, and especially if you have your own irrigation system, you have time until you have to tend the crops. And there's minor tending too, but you see my point.
I do see your point, but remember that we wouldn't have these issues if we didn't allow, or if the states didn't allow, the general government or the federal government to do things that are unconstitutional. And one of those being, and the one I'm talking about right now, is not having your money backed by gold and silver. This would not be quite the issue. You see what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes. And I do see, and I do understand that almost 100%, 98-99% of all of our problems have stemmed from federal government overreach. But yes, the states have, you know, a little part in this. The churches have a little part in this. And the people have a little part in this, but through complacency and actually, you know, getting involved. I mean, Madison, during that veto, if you read that bonus bill veto, if you had a chance to read that.
I did.
He kind of says at the very end, he really wants to sign this. And even if the states are willing to allow the federal government to violate the Constitution, it still doesn't make it constitutional.
Yeah, exactly.
And so down the road, you can create this power, and all of a sudden it can be dismantled by the federal government because it's a violation of the Constitution. So very insightful. But did I run this to ground? I probably threw in way too much other information, but the states actually are not held to this freedom of the press unless unless the states within their own constitution have actually uttered that the press shall be free in that state.
Right, but even if they have, it's similar to label lynching, it's going the other direction. They're saying I think I mentioned this in an email, use the word inviolate or inviolable, but like you had said just earlier, a few minutes ago, they've taken this to create this bubble for them to where they can do anything. Like you said, they can get away with murder. So even if it does say it in their own state constitutions, I guarantee you it doesn't say that it's okay to commit murder. But that's what they can basically do that.
Right. Right. But understanding that states do have constitutions, the states, the people have delegated powers to the states. This begs the necessity, once we start moving forward, that almost every state really needs to have a state constitutional convention, because most states have allowed their state constitutions to be drifted and changed and modified by government regulation, by fiat of bureaucracy. And so, why does every state within its constitution have this association or an agency or a power over the environment for the environmental protection? That mm-hmm. Most of those rules, most of those powers given to the states were not delegated by a true constitutional convention. It was injected because almost every state has this little clause that the U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land. And they said, well, the federal government says that we've got to do this. And they construe that as constitutional mandates, but they're not.
Right, right. This concept, and maybe you know the name, I don't know, people probably use different names for this term, but as I understand it, what I've come across in my studies myself is that a state's original constitution, there's something known as, I'm using the wrong term, but it's holdover. It's that the rights that the original state constitution established for the people, protected by the state, given to us from God, no matter how silly future state legislatures become, they cannot rewrite these basic fundamental rights. Do you know the term for that, just by chance? Or do you know what I'm saying? Did I explain it well enough to ask?
I don't know.
Okay, that's fine. It's probably a deficiency on my end. But anyway, the point is that, again, no matter how silly or how progressive these state legislatures have become, just like you said, it's not constitutional, and they cannot violate our unalienable rights anyway, no matter how silly they have become. So I don't see that as an issue. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So if we move forward, we're almost out of time, believe it or not. So we'll have to take this into the next segment. But in moving forward, you created this next question that's I think I'd like to see you clarify. What do you think is a modern day example of the first grievances compared to the Declaration of Independence? And I could actually simplify this, but since these are your words, how do you what does this mean?
What it means is, for example, specifically what I'm working on is I'm trying to make the point that the amount of liberty we have, I say it like this, we're the least Christian we've ever been in this country today, and exactly commensurately, concomitantly, however you want to say it, we have the same little liberty that we have, the least amount of liberty that we've ever had. And I think the two go hand in hand. And we were just discussing this a little earlier,
right,
about the religions. Now, I have my own little list, my own little project where I have, and I've done more than half of them, and I have it listed out. I have my little pocket constitution here. It's 27 grievances. And I wanted to show, or I'm in the process of showing, how we have modern examples of these same 27 grievances today, but how come we haven't yet striven to
woken up?
Rectify it?
Why haven't we woken up?
Precisely.
Exactly. So there's a problem. So that's a Thomas Jefferson paradigm. Thomas Jefferson is a guy that likes to create the mountain of problems. And Madison, in his brilliance, was the guy that could actually just eliminate the mountain of problems by identifying the base of the mountain. And so here, and if you read the Federalist Papers, or not the Federalist Papers, the Federalist arguments regarding the Bill of Rights with the Constitution, what happens, and almost everybody pointed it out through the different ratification debates, that when you go down this path of listing things that you can't do, what do you do about the things that you forgot? Well, then, as Mr. Iredell says, you know, generations from now, you know, when they find out this new thing regarding privacy or the internet and how technology is kind of twisted and or, you know, has created different problems, all of a sudden they go, well, surely they didn't think about that. But because they didn't, then, you know, we're not protected from government intruding into that. See, that's the problem.
Yes.
If you look at the party platforms, they are the problem as well, because mm-hmm. what you're talking about, as far as I view the party platform, it becomes today's modern, you know, let's just call it declaration of grievances. Why? You can be very succinct and very concise in saying the Constitution we have an enumerated constitution that delegates very specific and defined powers. All powers that are currently being exercised and are created by either branch of government, the judiciary, the executive, and or Congress, any powers that have been created by any form of the federal government that are not within those enumerated powers are unconstitutional. You just finished it. You're done.
Now, well, I think you've helped me immensely. I don't have to do the whole 27.
Right. It's all about compliance to the Constitution. I'm working with an organization that is trying to, they're just getting their feet, Friends of Liberty United. And they started going down these paths of, you know, vaccinations, a resolution against this and this. And before they wrote, you know, more than a couple, I quickly sent an email back and said, are you going to create a resolution for every problem, or are you just going to just simplify this and say the federal government has been delegated very specific and defined powers, and anything that is not within those enumerated powers, they have no business meddling with it, and then just be done?
Yes. Excuse me. All right, look, there's one thing I did want to mention, because you had brought this up you spoke of this at our leadership meeting on last Monday, or recently anyway. But I wanted to bring this up because you had to duck out, I think.
Yeah.
But we spoke of this, that we might cover this. But with the NLA, when I'm just here to tell you, this has been my observation and this is my conclusion. This is me alone, Eric Levy. This is my conclusion, not NLA's, but people who take exception, people who find exception or take exception with NLA's approach, my conclusion about these people, and you know who I'm talking about, but I don't want to name names. I certainly, if they want to work with us eventually, then by all means. But what I have noticed, my conclusion is the NLA says the people are to govern themselves and the people are capable of governing themselves. These organizations that take exception with our method, mm-hmm. what I have found is that they say they want the same thing, but when we begin to flesh it out, before we reach the same goal, and they say they have the same goal as us, but before we get there, it's like they're turning back and they're lateraling the ball back to the government. They want to cede back part of our sovereignty.
Right.
And what my conclusion is that they don't really believe the people should govern themselves. And this is nothing new, and we, you know, our founders had to deal with this. Yep. But that is my conclusion.
Okay. We're really out of time, so let's just carry this over right into the very next segment. And so, you know, people can just tune in the following episode to hear us talk about this, as well as religious laws and unrighteous laws and the other topics that we still need to cover, if you've got time.
Yes, sir. It'd be my pleasure.
Okay. So, folks, and as we go into this quick break, I just I want you to understand that we're going to have Mr. Levy back. And so please stay tuned. Let me close out this episode, and we'll come up with a summary so that in tomorrow's episode, we'll be able to finish this conversation. So, again, please stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this. Thank you so much. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. All right, so having some foresight on the next conversation, because obviously we've already recorded it, I want you to understand that I do not subscribe to word control, political correctness, because I deal enough with organizations that, you know, whenever they hear the word convention, they accuse you of an Article 5 convention, like I just trampled and ripped apart the Constitution. That's ludicrous, and that's really not what I believe mature cognitive people do. I believe that we have to understand what that person is saying and what they mean by the words that they're using and try to frame it appropriately. Does that make sense? I hope that makes sense, because when you hear somebody talk about, because 9 times out of 10, people get lost in the nuances of the words. And so my only position in preparing for the next episode, again, foresight, you know, being perfect here, is the fact that when people start using We the People, you know, the We the People Foundation, is that a democracy foundation? Those are key, or those are almost like code words for, you know, Democrats and or communists and those who want a democratic form of government to push us into a communist government. And if you understand what they tried to do, Lenin and Stalin were very articulate in saying, I don't care who votes, I only care how the votes are counted. And that's how they topple the people, by actually taking control of the count and the outcome of the election. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we'll be back with Eric Levy tomorrow. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.